This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
More guests coming your way. Wes, one of the topics today obviously has been what took place yesterday at Florida State. And I think of the Noles, I think the media, and who better to touch base with than our man Danny Cannell. DK joins us this morning bright and early as we grab him away from watching the Masters. I know he's glued in with everything going on at Augusta. Danny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Yeah, Augusta in November. Give me it. I'll take it once in a lifetime, which is all we're going to get. I wouldn't want to see it on a yearly, annual basis, but I'll take it for this weird 2020. I love it. And I think it's only going to get better over the weekend because the way it's lined up, it'll be finished, you know, by early mid-afternoon, and then you can just flip right over and watch college football and the NFL. So give me all the Augusta action I can get.
I like the game plan. I do.
Danny, let's get to yesterday. Obviously, Mike Norvell, midweek, coming off a loss to Pittsburgh, going to NC State Saturday night in a ball game here on the network. And all of a sudden, he's got to start his press briefing with personnel moves. It seems like a Week 11 NFL presser, not a, you know, Week 10 college football. Hey, we're getting ready for the, you know, last turn of the weekend or the last turn of the regular season. But it just seemingly hasn't hit any kind of continuity and any kind of rhythm. And in some ways I feel like the guy's in a tough spot here in year one, cause it doesn't seem to be getting any better.
No, Wes, you know, I was wondering when you guys reached out, I was like, hey, are we talking about the North Carolina win when Florida State beat the fifth ranked team in the country? I'm like, oh, that's right. We have news to discuss. And since that moment, it has been just a disaster, you know, because like at that point, there was a lot of excitement from Florida State fans and, you know, saying, hey, maybe this is kind of the win that could turn the season around. And yet that was so far from the case as things have kind of derailed from there. And then culminating yesterday with the exodus, I would call it, of, you know, several players and leaders on both sides of the ball. It's concerning. You know, the kids out there would call it a dumpster fire, I believe, with that meme of the dumpster that's on fire going down the storm in a flood. I mean, that's kind of what it feels like. And maybe the sadder thing is that it's not that big of a story because Florida State's been so bad. But I think, Wes, you hit on something key. Like, this is a year that I really feel like was going to be a wash. I didn't think it was going to be this bad. But I do think Mike Norvell and his staff do get a pass because of all the unique challenges that they faced. And there are a lot of coaching staffs around the country that are dealing with the exact same thing. First-year head coaches trying to change a culture, trying to take over a program, turn it around the right direction. So it's not an excuse, but I think there'll be a lot of coaches that do get the same pass because you have to remember it takes time to do a couple things. One, you've got to recruit to your style of systems, both on the offense and defensive side of the ball. That doesn't happen overnight. That takes multiple years. But I think more importantly, it takes time to implement new systems on the offense and defensive side of the ball, because I think people take for granted how, oh, it's just football. You go out there, you practice a couple hours a day, and you're ready to go. It takes time, especially when you're restricted with only 20 hours a week, to get players fully educated and fully up to speed on what you want to do, especially when you try to do tempo and you try to, you know, throw in different wrinkles. So I think it's understandable where it's got to this point. And then I think the more concerning thing is, you know, where is Mike Norvell with the locker room? That's always something I'll watch closely for, is has he lost the locker room? And clearly he might have lost some players, but more importantly, what are the younger players doing? Are they buying into what That's he's it. Doing? Are they buying into the long-term plan? I understand guys that are a year away from the NFL or want to play quarterback. So I think the more important question is what's happening within that locker room with the youth movement that needs to take place. And that we really don't know the answer to. But I'm hopeful that the younger crew on this team is looking for the future, still putting in the work, and they're getting valuable experience, even though it's going to be painful in the short term.
Danny, it's interesting that you bring up North Carolina, because that's where I was going to go with you. And to me, that is the snapshot of Florida State, because for 30 minutes, they gave you the snapshot of, hey, you know what? We still have a lot of really good players. And when they're motivated and things are going and you've got momentum, They're dynamic. They can make plays on both sides of the ball. And even in that same game, they gave you 30 minutes where offensively they did nothing and they were holding on for dear life. And you wondered what was going on the defensive side. And even at the end of that game, as awesome as it was for the W, there were still Florida State fans going, yeah, but. And it's almost like, hey, wait a minute. You know, you're not going to get everything back overnight. But I think that's the tease, isn't it? That Florida State, I think we all know, even though it looks awful from the periphery, there are still really good players on this roster. Florida State is always going to be able to recruit and get terrific talent. Mike Norvell, hey, he didn't get dumber overnight. This is a really good football coach. And you know what? Patience is one of those things that, you know what, a lot of fans, I wish they had him. I wish administrators had it. Let the guy do his job. It's going to take some time in Tallahassee. But that North Carolina game to me is the ultimate snapshot of Florida State. You can get some highs, you can get some lows, but the one thing you know is it's wildly inconsistent.
Totally agree, Pack. I mean, that's been the story not only this season, but for the last few years, right? I mean, even during the Willie Taggart era, it was, you know, how many leads were blown in the second half where they just couldn't hang on. And at the time, you kind of looked, and I excused it by saying, well, this team needs to learn how to win. They need to learn how to close out games. And then you start looking at this pattern, and it's really this just pattern of inconsistency where the execution or mental errors start to creep in, and you're just saying, man, what is the problem here? And I do think it speaks to creating a culture, a mindset. And I don't like to go back and say, well, when I played, because I don't like that. I sound old. I don't want to sound old. But when I played at Florida State, when we were winning 14 years in a row, we were ranked in the top five every single season. The mindset was, I don't care what the scoreboard says, we have a chance to win. And when we had a lead, it was, let's go for 50 points. Let's go for 70 points, which we did three times my senior year. Like, and the defensive mindset was, let's pitch a shutout. Like, let's go for, you know, let's not give up any points. There was a mentality that has to be shifted, because I think now when the players look up at the scoreboard and they see a 2-touchdown lead, they start going, oh man, let's not blow this again. Or, you know, the defense starts thinking we can't give up that big play. And then you just get into a mental mindset that is not a place for success. And I think that's Mike Norvell's one of his challenges. He's got many challenges, but I think that's one of his challenges to change the mentality. And I thought you could have seen that. Like, there's moments, like when you get to North Carolina, even though they blew, you know, came really close to blowing it, North Carolina, a couple drop passes that would have been, you know, turned around the game for North Carolina, potentially won the game. Even though you had those moments, it was like, all right, we got to win. Could that be the shift in that mentality? And yet I think myself, that wasn't a very wise take, because it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of wins and W's to get that shift in mindset where you start believing that you are this dominant program, that you can go back to winning, that you develop that killer instinct, that just, it takes a lot of time. So that's one of many areas that Mike Norvell is going to have. And I'll say this, Pack, I do think Florida State fans are understanding, like, hey, this is a rebuild. This was not a one-year turnaround. Yes, there was some excitement, but I think, and I don't like putting blame on one specific area, but I would say priority number one for Mike Norvell is find your quarterback. And I think that was a wise thing to play Jordan Travis this year. I think he should play Chuba Purdy more too. And I think he should recruit. And I think he should explore the graduate transfer route. Because look at Miami. This is what I keep telling Florida State fans. The Miami Hurricanes were bad last year. They lost to FIU. They lost to Louisiana Tech in their bowl game. They had a rough finish. They were in a bad spot. And then guess what? They found a quarterback in De'Ara King who infused some life into the program, who gave you more consistent play. And then all of a sudden it changes things on the offensive side of the ball. Maybe you're able to recruit a couple more guys because they get excited about the quarterback. Maybe the defense starts to play with a little bit more enthusiasm and a little bit more, an attitude of, hey, we just got to keep our team in the game. And I do think clearly the quarterback has been a massive problem for Florida State the last 3-4 years.
Okay, Danny, here's the thing you mentioned. You touched on two things I want to follow up on. One is they've got time. Mike Norvell should have time. And you look at like two sophomores and two freshmen are their top four ball carriers, not named Jordan Travis, okay? So that's one thing. The second part is, outside of Janarius Robinson and Briggs up front, you've got Kando as a junior. I'm of the belief Asante Samuel probably comes out because I think he's a talented guy. I'm going to guess if Nasruddin plays this year, he probably comes out. But elsewhere you look on their board, they're a relatively young football team. The thing that I see, though, is we keep coming back to a topic. Last Saturday night, Rocky Boyman was with us on the show doing the ball game against Pitt. We kept coming back to one thing that's been there kind of for like 3 or 4 years, and that's the offensive line. They've got to get that part worked out, or no quarterback worth his salt's going to come there, right?
Absolutely. You got to address that issue, but it's not like Willie Taggart, the previous coach, wasn't aware of that. It wasn't like Mike Norvell, you know, wasn't aware of that the moment he took over. It's a hard position to recruit, but I think you do have to go tackle it with, you know, with a vengeance and say, we got to go after every offensive lineman we can. We've got to stockpile them. If they transfer, because they didn't win the job, then so be it. Because it does impact, you know, the quarterback play clearly. And James Blackman gets a rough, you know, he gets a rough criticism coming his way. But he's had a different offensive coordinator every year. He's played behind a rough right. offensive line. But there were times this year early this season. In fact, I was texting with Charlie Ward, former Heisman Trophy winner at times. And we were, you know, we text after games like, hey, what are you seeing? And, you know, there was a couple games where we're watching it saying, yes, the offensive line looked bad, but there were also places to go with the football. There were also times when you could have thrown away the ball to protect the offensive line. And that it has to be a relationship where there's some continuity, where there's, you know, hey, the quarterback understands the concepts, where he understands the protections, where he understands just the basic tenet of, hey, a bad play, that, you know, which could be a sack, you think it's a bad play or a throwaway, that can actually be a really positive thing, and it's way better than throwing an interception or trying to run around and you cough the ball up and it's a turnover. So that balance just has been something that all FSU quarterbacks have really struggled with, but totally agree with you. You know, you got to attack the offensive line and go recruit there and try to shore up some of the issues across the front, because that's, you know, it's an essential part of making teams. And a lot of coaches build a philosophy around you build on the inside out. I don't think you have to as much the way the game has evolved in 2020, but clearly you need to protect your quarterback better than they have in Tallahassee.
Danny, one of our favorite student athletes that's appeared on this show is Marvin Wilson, and he has meant a ton to Florida State football. And the fact that he's got this injury, probably career over from a Florida State perspective, even he's going to hang out, which doesn't surprise me at all, still be a part of that locker room to say, hey, guys, he's got to keep playing hard. What has he meant, do you think, to Florida State football, big picture? Even during these down times, this is a really, really special player on the field and away from it.
Yeah, and Marvin Wilson was one of the ones who really kind of spearheaded the, you know, biggest controversy of the offseason when he called out Mike Norvell. And at the time, it felt like, oh my goodness, you know, Mike Norvell might have lost the locker room. But Marvin Wilson turned into the player that was Mike Norvell's biggest asset in the locker room, that was that emotional leader. And he is an outstanding player. He's an outstanding young man. I do think he went into that meeting when they had a team meeting in Tallahassee in the offseason. He listened to his coach and he took his advice and he came up with some plans to, you know, actually implement change. And he's still doing those. You know, if you follow him on social media, he's still heavily involved in the community. And this is what, like, this is a player that makes me proud to be a Florida State Seminole, because you see the way he plays the game, but also the way he carries himself off the field. And I do think he'll still be an integral part of this team, you know, even though he won't play much more this season, if at all, when he, you know, decides to prepare for the NFL draft. It's more about his character and his emotional uplifting attitude that has meant so much to this program in Tallahassee. So I'm thrilled that he's been a part of this program. I feel bad for him, though, honestly, because he's tried to do everything he can. He's put his body on the line. He's been the emotional leader, and it just hasn't translated into results. And for that, I feel bad for him. But I hopefully one day this program will get it turned around. And even though he won't see it, he'll be a big part of it.
Well said.
Danny, in our final minute here, expectation in the last quarter of the season, last third of the season from a former football player is what?
For Florida State specifically?
Yeah.
Youth movement experience, like almost use this like an exhibition. I don't care about wins and losses. Florida State fans should, and they will, But let me see improvement, subtle improvement. When you go watch the film, let me see every single position making better decisions. Let me see a lot of effort and figure out where you need to go in 2021. I mean, that's what the remainder of the season has to be in Tallahassee, is preparing for the future. And it's an opportunity. You've got to sell that to your younger players. Hey, this is an opportunity. If you make mistakes, there should be very little stress on you. Like, no one thinks we're going to win any more games. So go out there and utilize this team to build for the future so that you can go into the spring with some momentum, find those bright spots, cultivate them so that you at least have some sort of momentum going into the season. And if you get a few W's, not a few, if you get one or two W's, you could be in a great spot and kind of use that for recruiting, use that to infuse some life into the program and to get the fan base excited for next year.
All right, we've had enough of you. We'll let you get back to the Masters and root for another fellow Florida State man, Brooks Koepka, to win this weekend in Augusta. We're done with you. Be away.
See ya. You got it. I'm going to root for Brooks right now. Let's go.
Always a pleasure.
You got it, fellas.
Yep, Brooks Koepka, Florida State guy, Augusta. By the way, yeah. I understand it's raining down there. I couldn't help but notice during our conversation with Danny, it is raining sideways. Mm. And in fact, our next-door neighbor's underwater. We got the river overflowing, Wes. Be careful out there. It's nasty around here. Just be careful.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
You've got a team that's unique because you have some veterans and you've got some young talent. Talk to me about what this preseason has been like and just how long it's felt.
Well, it's been very interesting because, we have I told our team the other day, we can't continue to keep living on last year's guys. And so we have to step up and show who we are with this addition of the Seminole team. Growing up in North Carolina, I have a different perspective of and great love and admiration for the ACC. I grew up watching it, and I get so excited each year as we approach the ACC season because I grew up watching this in my blood. I eat it, I sleep it, and I breathe it, and I try to bring that level of focus to our basketball team and try to explain to them, that we are in the best league ever assembled in the history of college basketball. In order to be competitive in it, we're going to have to be at our very, very best. And that's what we're trying to instill in our kids this year. And I feel confident that at some point in time, I think we can get that done.
Wow. That is Leonard Hamilton from last night's ACC Operation Basketball. Day two of our wall-to-wall coverage starts at 5 o'clock this afternoon with the second round of the women's basketball tip-off, and then the men take the floor, if you will, 7 o'clock tonight, ACC Operation Basketball. 4 hours of hoop programming right here on ACC Network and always available on the ESPN app. Coach Ham looks like he's ready to ride. So does Coach K. And good to see Luke Hancock, our buddy, last night on that coverage as well, Pack.
I watched a bunch of that. Of course, I was busy till 7 with the radio gig at SiriusXM, but I caught some of the men's stuff last night. And Wes, it's funny. I said to you the other day, we're here in the middle of November. Do you have the vibe yet for hoops? And I was watching that last night, seeing all the coaches and the interviews and stuff, which was great. And it's just different, right? I mean, we're so used to seeing everybody in person. Yep. Again, in this day and age of the Zoom interview and everything else, it's just where we are. But it's hard to believe. We're 2 weeks away from tipping this thing off. We mentioned that Miami's opener against Stetson has already been postponed due to the COVID. But hey, it's right around the corner. Can't wait to see how this plays out. It's going to be a fascinating year in basketball just to see if we can pull this off.
It is indeed, and that speaks to something that Mike Bray addressed earlier this week. And if you missed this earlier in our show, important to note that these coaches now are less than 2 weeks away from the start of the season. And you think, well, they've got it all buttoned up, they've got a plan together and things like that. But there is one outlying factor out there, and it concerns kind of the transfer situation, waivers for immediate eligibility, delays, appeals, all these things. Trey Wirtz is a young man that has transferred to play basketball at Notre Dame, and his status is still unknown. Mike Bray commented it and went right for Indianapolis with his answer the other day.
Trey came under the total understanding, like what we've done with all our transfers, you sit a year in residency, you get older, you get stronger, then you get eligible. About 3 weeks ago, along with Brent Moberg and our compliance, we came up with a proposal, and Brent did a fabulous job writing it. My theory was this should be an all-hands-on-deck season to get through the season. And we're already going down the line, the NCAA, that is, in college basketball. We've seen a lot of waivers, all right? Kids are getting waivers to play, and more are getting, many, many more are getting waivers than denied. And I get that. That's fine. Whatever. That's great. I don't know why anyone on my roster would be ineligible in a COVID season. Trey Wirtz could be my seventh man one night if we're going to play NC State and we wouldn't have to cancel the game. If he's ineligible under the residency rules of sitting out, I may have to cancel the game if I have some guys that test positive that are in quarantine. So we proposed this 3 weeks ago. All hands on deck. Anybody on your roster should be eligible to put in the game. And I think it naturally fits with, we gave everyone their year of eligibility back a month ago anyways. Trey Wirtz, let's look at Trey's case. He still has his 2 full years of eligibility that he was expecting when he came here. Even if he plays half the games this year or only 12 minutes. So I would hope, and I think there's some momentum picking up on this. It's just logical. You look at football games have been canceled because there's not enough guys. Utah didn't have enough guys. What is it, 53? What's the basketball number going to be? I think you need 7 to play a game. No one said anything. We don't have a league rule. I've not seen a national rule. But anyone on my roster or anyone's roster should be eligible to play, and we're going to continue to campaign and lobby the NCAA. I believe some other leagues have picked up on this. The other reason is in January, everyone's going to be eligible on a transfer moving forward anyways. You know, the year in residency is going to go out the window most likely at the convention in January. But in the midst of this, if I have a roster of 12 guys, which I do, Trey Wirtz being one of them, Elijah Morgan, my walk-on, I need all those guys eligible night to night because I'm going to need them all to get through 5 months.
Coach Bray is 100% correct in everything he just said, and I have no earthly idea why the NCAA would even waste a whole lot of time other than going, you're right, let's move forward, let's figure out a way to make this work. So I think Coach is all over it, man. Spot on.
Too simple, isn't it, Mark? Just too simple.
Common sense.
Makes too much sense. Yeah. How about that we don't know how many players are necessary for a game? Surprised?
I mentioned earlier, I just assumed that was discussed. And when he mentioned that the other day in his press conference in the rant, I just shook my head like, yeah. How in the world are we going to move forward with this? But like I said, we're 2 weeks away. For folks that are like, basketball, man, we're months away. No. 2 weeks away from getting this thing started, at least trying to get this thing started. So a lot of work to be done on this deal. We're trying to figure out how can we get to a conclusion of a football season. We're also trying to figure out, again, this basketball thing I think is going to be a tricky, tricky deal. But hopefully we get to it and get some games. But I am worried about a positive test and contact tracing. We've already seen it wipe out position groups in football. Hey, we're only talking about 12 guys, right? 12 members of a basketball team, men or women. And if you're traveling and somebody tests positive, contact tracing. I mean, if you're out for 10 days, Wes, not to mention you throw in a couple cardio days, that's 2 weeks. That's 2 weeks of games. And how do you reschedule those? So, again, I don't mean to be gloom and doom here, but this is going to be a difficult task, I think. It's going to be really tricky to kind of navigate your way through and hopefully get a March Madness.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
I can only speak for the Charlotte metropolitan area. But I think we got flooding going on everywhere. Man, I'm telling you, I think the world's coming to an end outside. Right. I just told you a second ago, it's midnight outside. I don't know what in the world's going on. Be careful. But just if you're out and about, man, be careful.
I always like it when you take on the role of meteorologist, when you become Larry Sprinkle. I always like that.
I just looked outside, and like normally the sun's out by now. And I'm telling you, I looked out, I was like, it is like midnight outside. And I opened up the door, and the dogs looked at me like, we're not going out there. You better come up with another plan than that. We're not going for that. You shut the door, big boy, and let's grab you a chicken stick and finish the show. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's quickly, I mean, can we go to Mark Herzlich, please, this program? Because if I get any more updates on temperature and if I get weather and traffic together anymore, Mark, I'm going to be in real bad shape here before we're done at 10. So bought yourself a little bit of excitement last Saturday, you and Cotter did, huh? The old Liberty Virginia Tech just delivered right up, didn't it?
It sure did, and gosh, man, you know, I didn't know what to expect from Liberty, really, honestly. As you go into that game and watch what they've done so far, you know, it's been impressive, but it was against, you know, lesser competition, I guess. And so, you know, as we looked at the Virginia Tech game, that was going to be their first real test, but, I mean, they were fantastic. Hugh Freeze got a huge win, and at the end of the day, Hugh Freeze really outcoached Justin Fuente, and it came down to that last drive, and really good game plan and calling by Hugh Freeze, and you know Justin Fuente admittedly kind of dropped the ball towards the end of that game.
You know, I was watching the game, Mark, and I couldn't believe it. I fell off the couch, thinking, "What in the? How in the world did Virginia Tech win that game?" And then all of a sudden, how it unfolded, you're thinking, "Oh well, the kid's not going to make a 51 yarder." I mean, his percentages weren't great, and man, that thing would have been good from 65. I mean, it was as pure as the day is long, and I know Coach Fuente all week has talked about it, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, and that's one of those you'll probably take to your grave going, man, if I could just have made one quick change, I would have done that. But it'll be interesting to see how the Hokies respond this week with Miami coming to town. And you just can't let a game like that beat you twice.
No, you can't. And really, Miami is coming to town doing what they do. You know, D.R. King kind of playing really well right now. You know, Rhett Lashley's offensive game plan is, you know, for the most part, ball control, field position game plan. But then when they need to open it up, they can do it. So, you know, right now, Miami has themselves positioned really well. And Virginia Tech now, you know, with this many losses, kind of finds themselves on the outer portion of this entire race. So it's going to be more so for, you know, pride and playing for your season in terms of getting it above 500, getting to a bowl game, because I think for Virginia Tech, you know, the ACC championship game is no longer in the picture. And that's kind of, we're getting to that point in the season where people have either played their way into the conversation of having possibility or played their way out. And right now, you know, two teams playing that game, one's on the outside and one's on the inside. And Miami's real task is to make sure they keep rolling and they keep on winning so that they can position themselves correctly, especially after that, you know, monster Clemson loss. And we'll see kind of what happens on Saturday with Notre Dame versus Boston College.
Okay, let's go to Chestnut Hill real quick here. We had John Mita Perel on earlier. I mean, this thing's just kind of sitting there, right? I mean, here's Notre Dame off this win. We've got the story of David Gordon kicking the field goal in 93. I mean, we got all the kind of, you know, storybook stuff hanging in the balance here. In your mind, though, how do the Eagles pull off the upset?
They play their game. Honestly, if they just do what they do, they're going to win this game. And so Notre Dame is so good at stopping the run. And I was so impressed doing a pretty intensive film study on their game versus Clemson. The linebackers for Notre Dame are fantastic. Shane Simon and Drew White. Those guys in the middle, just they play such good defense. They have such good eyes and such good run fits. And that's really good against a team that runs the football. But Boston College doesn't run the football. I mean, David Bailey had a great game last week, but that's not their normal game plan. So I think Phil Dracovic drops back, throws the ball 50 times. The weak spot of this Notre Dame defense is their cornerback position. And so I think they're going to have a lot of trouble dealing with C.J. Lewis and Zay Flowers and Hunter Long. I think there's just a lot of weapons that Boston College has, which is, you know, you don't usually say that about Boston College, but this year you can. And defensively, they've been playing well, obviously not as good as Notre Dame, but I think that Boston College is going to be able to put up a lot of points and do it through the air. And I mean, it's the red bandana game as well. And Boston College always, always shows up and plays well for that game and on our Wells Crowther and his sacrifice that he has made.
All right, I just want to make sure I heard you right, because I heard you the other night say it, and I just heard you say it again. I just want to make sure for three. I mean, this is the three-peat. Boston College will beat Notre Dame.
Boston College will beat Notre Dame. You heard me right, and don't believe me if you don't want to, but no, I think they will.
Hey, let me tell you something. College football, I say it all the time. It never disappoints, and the more you read and the more you study, the dumber you get on Saturday. So nothing would surprise me in the least in this world of college football. Nothing, especially during this pandemic, which has totally been upside down. I mean, I said the other day, we got teams like Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska, Florida State, LSU, and Tennessee, 7-19 and unranked. And we've got Indiana, Northwestern, Coastal Carolina, Liberty, and Marshall all ranked and are 26-0. That is a snapshot of college football in 2020. So BC knocking off Notre Dame, if it happens, they'll have to play well, needless to say. But would it shock anybody? It shouldn't. I mean, that's just where we are right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the big thing is that if you beat someone, it doesn't mean you're better than them. Like, you know, a team, you go out there and play 10 times, I think Notre Dame is probably the better team. And they're definitely the best defense in the ACC. But just circumstances line up a certain way and matchups line up a certain way that I think this one goes Boston College's way.
Quick, Mark, before Boston comes in and rearranges the set there, it sounds like. Give me thought. give me a thought on your ball game, Virginia and Louisville. The Cards and the Cavaliers pushed back a week. Louisville kind of a very awkward situation. The COVID test runs high, the positive rate. They have to push it back. Virginia's had to wait a little bit. What do you expect?
Well, I think that it's a game that can be really exciting if both teams play to their potential. And it's going to be a game that can be really ugly and sloppy if both teams kind of play to their, lack of potential. And Louisville is that type of team that they don't play good defense. They really don't. And so UVA is going to have opportunities offensively. And I think with Lavelle Davis back, they're going to be able to really stretch Louisville's defensive backfield, opening up a lot of running lanes for whether it's Keaton Thompson or Brennan Armstrong, kind of whoever decides to take that the carry load in this game. But you know, I think it's going to be a very high-scoring game, not a ton of defense, especially from Louisville. And then in terms of the back end for Virginia, if they're able to get healthy, it'll be a little bit closer and be able to hold Louisville a little bit more. But I expect a high-scoring game. And at least as I'm calling the game, that's what I'm hoping for to make it a little bit exciting.
Mark, I told you I was watching your game on Saturday from Blacksburg, and I couldn't help but notice that your play-by-play partner, Mr. Cotter, when doing the Packer and Durham promo, could not help but mention the fact that you're on a weekly basis. The coveted invite was on the sideline. She's got a weekly slot. And Cotter kind of, I'm not going to say he was begging for a spot, but I kind of felt bad watching the game, sitting there eating my third slice of pizza and sipping on an ice cube going, man, I mean, we could get Cotter on here, but I mean, he sounded kind of desperate. I'm going to be honest with you. I felt bad sitting in the comfort of my own home listening to a promo of Packer and Durham, listening to Cotter kind of complain that you're getting some limelight and coveted invites on every week. So I hope we can get him on. Just tell him it's not personal.
Don't feel bad because I told him, I said, look, you can get on. I made a bet for you on Packer and Durham before the Georgia Tech Boston College game that whoever won that game would pick a Halloween costume for the other person. Boston College won, and I told him, I said, look, you can go on Packer and Durham next Friday in a Halloween costume, but he refused the offer, so don't feel bad.
All right. I feel better now.
Ah.
I feel better now. Now I feel completely redeemed after hearing you give me the truth behind that story.
Hey, Mark, thanks always. Appreciate the time, my man.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I mean, hold on. Let me check and see if the world is still out there. Man, we're hanging on. We're hanging on, Wes. I mean, it is crazy outside. Fun show. Lots of guests. Lots of guests.
Oh, man. Great guests. Danny Cannell, Irish O'Fell, Mark Herzlich, Valentin Noel. Sensational, right?
Loved it.
Just really good stuff all the way around. John Mita Perel, voice of the Eagles, yep, getting us ready for Saturday at the Heights. One stat per game coming up tomorrow. Mike Brizendine, the soccer coach at Virginia Tech, will be here. Coveted invite returns to the program tomorrow. And all of that will pale in comparison to tomorrow when the knowledge of students at Wake Forest and Clemson. Now, how in the world did the lecture series that started at Queens University in Charlotte year ago morph into Wake Forest and, well, your alma mater, I'm guessing it's an alumnus in residence or something tomorrow?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I am doing a advisory panel for the new business school tomorrow. I have a 10:10 lecture. I have an 11:15 lecture on Zoom at Clemson University tomorrow. And then Monday, after the radio show, I am doing a Wake Forest communications class Zoom lecture. So I am partaking. I'm going to Queens College earlier this year in February, guest lecturer. And I'll do that tomorrow at Clemson in the morning and Monday at Wake Forest. So I've told you from day one, it's something I've always wanted to do. If there's an institution out there that says, hey, listen, you know, we can get Mark Packer coming here to talk about all kinds of stuff. I can go, Mark, like tomorrow is all about business, right? We do the business, the new business school. And then we go communications on Monday. So, I mean, I can go marketing, I can go business, I can go communications, multiple hats. I wear multiple hats. There you go.
All right. Couple of questions here.
Yes, sir.
Couple of questions. One, are your efforts at Clemson University pro bono or in exchange for reduced out-of-state tuition?
No, it has nothing to do with it. Even though I do talk to President Clements on a regular basis, and he's done great. By the way, they just celebrated his anniversary at Clemson University, so congratulations to him on that front. He's been fantastic.
Yes.
I don't charge a dime for any of this, whether it be Queens College, Clemson University, Wake Forest. I'm not looking to be remunerated on this at all. At all.
All right, is there not a little bit off the out-of-state tuition for your efforts down there at your alma mater?
Nothing. I do this because if I wasn't doing this job, these jobs, I would love to be a teacher. I would love to be college professor.
No, boy.
I would. I think it's great. I love watching young people get involved and digging it and being interested in it. So I'm excited about it tomorrow, those two classes.
Young people.
People. And then Monday night for Wake Forest.
Youngster people.
Yep, youngster people. Smart youngster people.
Taking Billy up there with you for the Wake Forest Zoom, perhaps? Billy going to Zoom in with you on the Wake deal?
No, I think it was part of the gig that they said, no, leave Billy back there at the house. You just handle this one. So I'm going to handle both of these solo. So I can't do any post-show interviews tomorrow. So as soon as we say adios at 10 a.m., on a Friday, I got to get ready and let it rip. 10:10, 11:15 classes, Clemson. And Bill Tumblin, by the way, is the senior lecturer at the new Wilbur and Ann Powers College of Business. And by the way, Wilbur and Ann Powers came off the hip for $60 million to put their name on the new business building. $60 million. That's West Durham coin right there. $60 million. So looking forward to it. That is West Durham money.
You know what that is?
That is West Durham Falcons pocket change is what that is. I'm not busy with the ACC.
That's what I dabble in on the side over there with the Falcons.
Me and Arthur Blank.
Sure.
Hey, Arthur.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Arthur. Hey. A couple mil over here, Arthur. Let's go.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.